Hi, and welcome to the Beyond the Peloton podcast. I'm your host, Spencer Martin, and we're going to be taking a closer look at the sport of professional cycling. The first observation I have is the sport's back. Racing's back tomorrow. We're on the eve of the Vuelta a Burgos, a small Spanish race that no one has ever cared about. Now has 14 World Tour teams and a stellar start list. And then on Saturday, we have Strada Bianchi, a race over the white gravel roads of Tuscany, finishing in the square at Siena. We're going to insert the name of that square.
Piazza del Campo.
That's our first World Tour race. So we're going to be breaking down the Vuelta a Burgos finish, and then we're going to be previewing this Saturday's Strada Bianchi race. So, I mean, this is a completely unprecedented compressed schedule. Just in the next week or two, we have Strada Bianchi. Tour of Poland starts on 4 days later on August 5th. Milan San Remo on August 8th. Giro de Lombardia on August 15th. I mean, this is a massive run of incredible races. It feels a little weird. I mean, it's spring classics, fall classics, all lumped together in early August. Not the way the creators of the sport intended this to go, but it's odd, but it's also oddly exciting. I think it's going to be interesting to watch if COVID holds off in Europe. This should be a really interesting run of races. We've never seen anything like that, and that's what I want to say up top. It's hard to do any hard predictions on this because we simply don't know anything. We've never seen this many monuments, this many big races just slammed together like this, and we have no body of evidence for how anyone's been racing this year, how good a shape anyone's in. So we just have to kind of, we're going to be guessing a lot. So up top, we're going to discuss stage one of the Vuelta a Burgos. Vuelta a Burgos, stage one is over. So we know that Felix Grosschartere of Bora Hansgrohe won the stage, and in really impressive fashion, just sprinting away with 700 meters to go on a steep climb, and I think putting 8 seconds into the second place finisher. Really, really impressive attack. But I think the big takeaway here is just how tough that racing was. What would normally be just kind of a putz around northern Spain and an early season stage race, it was tough with about 50K to go. It just, the echelons formed in the crosswinds, and the break went from like 4 minutes to caught in what felt like 10K. The peloton was all over the place. Valverde and the Movistar boys were in front, but really the Remco Evenepoel and his Deconinck Quickstep team just shredded that race. And then Remco, for no reason whatsoever, just soloed off the front for a while. From, I think, like 36K to 24K to go, he was just off the front by himself, and he had a 43-second gap at one point. Really, not a great move tactically. He's tired now for the GC days on stage three and five, but God, did he look strong. It was impressive. Keep your eye on when the Giro d'Italia, that's his main stage racing goal this year, comes around. He looked incredible out there. Other takeaways are there was crashes, and Simon Yates was dropped, which is another clue as to maybe why he's not going. We talked about this in last week's episode, but maybe why he's not going to the Tour de France to lead the Mitchelton Scott team. Reigning world champion Mads Pedersen was dropped with 34K to go. I thought that was interesting. What was really interesting was Ineos took up the front of the peloton with about 17K to go. And 10K to go, they kind of fizzled out. They didn't have the manpower to control that race. And then they failed to get a rider in the top 10. They did, however, put Richard Carapaz and Ivan Sosa, who I believe is a two-time winner of this race overall, in the main GC group, which was 10 seconds back from the stage winner, but also 2 seconds back from Valverde, who finished 8 seconds back. But that's also another thing. Valverde, you'd think a normal year, this is his stage. This is like textbook him, and he couldn't hold the wheel on that climb. Felix just roasted him. So possibly showing signs of age finally at, I believe, 40 years old. So not the most insightful analysis, but it is surprising to see someone like him finally kind of show some deterioration due to age. Let's not read too much into these, these early non-World Tour races, but I thought those points were worth noting. And keep an eye on Remco. Wow, he looked good out there. He looked like he could have gone a little bit longer, but he pulled up smartly. So let's talk about Strada Bianchi. So it's kind of a funny race. It's considered now like up there with the classics of the sport, but it's not that old. It's only been around since 2007. Compare that to the Tour of Flanders, which has been around since 1913. But what's worth noting is it's shorter. It's a shorter race. It's 184K long versus, you know, Milano Sanremo is 299K this year. You know, a big classic like Tour of Flanders might be 260K. So it's shorter. I think that's important because what tends to happen there is you get a little younger winner at these big classics like Paris-Roubaix, Tour of Flanders, Giro de Lombardia. You get older winners. You get more established riders. But Strada Bianchi, so since 2007, which is when it was first run, there's only been two riders to win the race aged 30 or older, which is Fabian Cancellara. He won the race at 27, so we're not counting that, but 31 and also at 35. And then Zdeněk Stybar, the Ducona Quickstep rider, won it at the age of 30 in 2015. So it's definitely a young man's race. And it also tends to favor slightly lighter riders than a race like Tour of Flanders and obviously Paris-Roubaix, which is, that's, you know, for the big boys. You know, there's only been three riders to win the race since 2007 that are 70 kilograms or heavier. So Thomas Lovquist was 70K. Well, I mean, this is listed on Pro Cycling Stats, so this is a borderline best guess. Not scientific, but 2009, he's listed at 70 kilograms. Fabian Cancellara is listed at 80 kilograms, which I have a hard time believing. I'd say he was maybe closer to 75 kilograms for those wins. And then Tej Benoot, 72 kilograms in 2018. It's definitely for slightly lighter riders. And that's because it's a really up and down course. I have a hard time. I can't quite get a handle on like where the moves go here. With these other big classics, I feel like I can pop in and I'll know exactly when the moves are going to happen. Strada Bianchi, it's a funky race. I've never been able to really figure it out. But that should inform us. And I feel like there's a slight media bias towards older riders because media members, A, tend to be older and they don't want to believe that, you know, your skills decline as you age. But also it's just name recognition. If you're a 40-year-old cycling rider, Greg Van Avermaet, you've known him for a long time, for your almost entire career as a rider. You know, you're just going to be biased towards these names that you know. But, I mean, if we're just looking at the facts, it's probably going to be a younger rider that wins on Sunday, or Saturday, sorry. Italian races are always on Saturday, the big races. So the first contender, Julian Alaphilippe, last year's winner, had an incredible year. 62 kilograms is what he's listed at. So, I mean, kind of the perfect weight for this race. 28 years old. That's a very good age for this race, apparently. We have no idea what type of shape he's in. I mean, this is all, we're just all guessing. None of us know anything at this point because we haven't seen any of these riders race since March, but would certainly consider him a worthy contender. Peter Sagan, doesn't actually perform that well in this race, but I love the guy. I think he's perennially underrated rider. He's incredible. One of the best riders we've had in the last 50 years. But I mean, who knows with him? He's a kooky guy. He kind of gives off a party persona. So perhaps quarantine isn't a great time to be betting on him to win. But he has looked pretty fit, and he's physically looking fit. And I tend to have a personal theory about him that he trains harder than he lets on, that he's actually a harder worker than is his public persona. So he could come out of this flying. This could be actually, this lockdown could have helped him regain some focus and have him flying. But you really don't know with him. He's impossible to predict. We have Matthew Vanderpoel, the 25-year-old phenom. If you listen to the media, this guy is already a five-time winner of the Tour de France. Just don't even start it this year because he's going to win. Little note there, he's never actually raced the tour. It's unlikely that he will for the next four years. He says he wants to race mountain bike professionally until the 2024 Olympics. So we might actually not see this guy racing a tour anytime soon. But I think it's important to note he did have a bad start to the season at the Volta a Algarve. He didn't look good. He had a fever apparently. I think he's actually been he races cyclocross, cross-country mountain bikes, and road professionally, all three at a world-class level. I think world champion in cyclocross and close to being a world champion on the road last year. So I think he races too much. I think it caught up to him towards the end of the cross season. He was just terrible at the beginning of this road season. But the flip side of that is perhaps this quarantine is, you know, let him rest. He hasn't been able to race. He might come out of this flying. So he's definitely one to keep your eye on. And we have Wout van Aert. I think he's been third in this race the past 2 years. Yeah, another 25-year-old cyclocross crossover, road crossover. He is actually, I actually prefer, this is a hot, unpopular take probably. I actually prefer him to Vanderpool. I think he is a big talent. And people forget he's already won a Tour de France stage. He won a stage at the Tour last year. And two stages of the Dauphiné Libéré, which is a big race. That's a hard race to win stages at. So, I mean, he's an incredible rider. A little caveat here, though. He did suffer a severe injury on stage 13 of the 2019 Tour de France. If you remember, he crashed into a barricade during the time trial. Kind of sliced his leg open like a little sausage casing, just getting ripped right open. So I think he was off his road bike for a while, for a significant amount of time. He did look, I was worried about him that he would atrophy in that leg and it would take him a long time if, you know, maybe he would never come back to, it's hard once the muscles atrophy to come back to that level, but he actually looked pretty good at the start of the year. Maybe not in his normal form, but 11th at Omloop Het Nieuwsblad, which is that's a really hard race, in March in Belgium, the terrible weather of Belgium. So He could be a good pick here. Philippe Gilbert, the guy is old as dirt, 38 years old. My God. So he might, I would imagine he'd be really focused in this quarantine. He must smell the end of his career, know that his chances are running out to win Sanremo. He did, even before the quarantine, he was 8th at Omloop Het Nieuwsblad, which is, that's a pretty good result. That race doesn't even really suit him. The feeling I get about him is he's an extremely focused trainer. So a big time without racing could actually really help him. I would bet that he's in incredibly good shape. We have Vincenzo Nibali. Course doesn't really suit him, but got to remember he won Milan-San Remo, which is an even worse race for him. So can't count him out. It is an uphill finish. Not my favorite. Don't count on him, but just note him. Just remember that. Greg Van Avermaet, he's a little old, 35 years old. I feel like he gets a lot of media coverage. He's an incredibly talented rider, incredibly versatile. Some fantastic performances to grab the yellow jersey early in the tour the last couple of years, just kind of showing off his versatility in those early mountain stages. But he doesn't actually win races that much. He's always throwing down way too much power in the middle of the race. He kind of telegraphs his moves. I would not bet on him to win here, but also another great trainer who is, I would bet that he's in incredible shape right now. He's not going to win though. Jakob Fuglsang, 35 years old, last year's runner up. Jakob's a very good rider. He's actually kind of a Grand Tour contender. So he's one of these all around riders. These guys are my favorite. They can compete in one day races, Grand Tours. I personally like him. I like watching him race. He did have an issue this offseason where he was accused of working with Dr. Ferrari, who is Lance Armstrong's old doping doctor. Potentially that could explain his incredible year last year, but let's look at this two ways. If he was working with Ferrari, he cannot, it's illegal to work with him. If you're caught working with him, it's the same as testing positive for a drug. So he probably ceased that relationship. If he was not working with him, that must have been incredibly emotionally distressing and probably pulled his focus away from training. So, and he's getting up there. I hate to rag on these mid-30 guys, being in my mid-30s myself, but you do decline, especially in the one-day races. Actually, little tip here. Alexei Lutsenko, his teammate, his Astana teammate, that guy's a complete stud. He can win on any course, hills, flats, anything in between. He was third in the UAE Tour back in February, third at Tour of Provence back in February, won by Nairo, by the way. He's won Tour of Oman twice, 2018, 2019. You might be thinking, oh, like, what does that race have to do with anything? It's actually a really hard race. It's you got to be able to survive in the crosswinds, and there's actually a tough mountain stage on Green Mountain, which is anything but green. I believe he won that stage in both 2018 and 2019. So this course is actually perfect for him. He would be one of my big favorites on this that no one is really talking about. We have Mikhail Kwiatkowski. I would hesitate to even call him a notable rider in this race. He won this race in 2017, and he has been on a steep decline since. Really has regressed. It's possible that, you know, maybe he's just in a funk in his career, and, you know, he's 30. He's still got time. He could possibly turn that around. I also have a theory that, you know, Sky, he rides for Ineos. He works on the front all the time. He's paid handsomely for it. He's kind of made that decision in life to take the money over leadership. I think it's blunted his ability to win in one-day races. I think it saps your kick just working on the front like that. You can't go from race winner, domestique, and then come back to winning races. I think his days of winning big one-day races are over. Also, honorable mention, we'll talk about his teammate, Gianni Mascagne. The guy is verified racist, not a very nice guy. He had a terrible 2019. He's incredibly talented, though, and he's Italian. This race is a big deal in Italy. He could have something here, but this is my opinion. He moved to Innsbruck, I believe, in 2018. This Austrian blood doping ring was busted in late at 2018, and then suddenly he is not very good. It's possible that he was, you know, maybe he moved to Austria because it's a fantastic place to ride a bike. Maybe he didn't. I haven't really, you know, appreciated him as a rider as much since that happened. This condensed season is going to be a make or break one for him. If he can pull this together and get a few good results, maybe he's back on the train of being an up and coming rider. If not, he could, you know, you kind of get in these funks where you have a few bad years together. You're not a nice person. People don't like you. People won't take chances on you. It's a steep slide from there. So if he's going to be a racist, going to be not a nice guy, he's got to win races if he wants to stay in the sport. So he might be motivated. Tej Benoot, 26 years old, won this race in 2018. I like him. He seems like a nice guy. I think he's a great, you know, Grand Tour contender someday. I do not like him at one day as a winner of one day races at scale. He has absolutely no finishing kick, so he's gonna have to win everything solo. He won it in 2018 solo. He won stage 6 of Paris-Nice this year solo. But you can only do that so much. He's not a Fabian Cancellara where he can just completely rip the legs off of people. So it's tough for him. He could win. He likely won't. He has to win alone. That's very hard to do. It's possible also that he's possibly a one-week stage racer. And then we have Zdenek Stybar, another mid-30s guy, 34. He got fourth last year. I don't love picking winners in their mid-30s. I think it just gets hard to win once you get up there. But we'll keep an eye on him. But if we look at these betting odds, this is where it gets interesting. We have Matthew Vanderpoel, big favorite at plus 300. So you bet 100, you win 400. So we talked about the odds last week at the tour. These grand tours are much easier to pick because there's probably 5 riders at the start of each race that can realistically win. So it's a much safer, those are much safer races to bet on. Versus these one days, these are more like, you know, let's say you have 45 riders in the group that could win. And then, you know, it takes a lot of skill, but a lot of it's luck. And it's hard to win one days, period. You know, there's a lot of variables. So these are just tough races to predict, tough races to bet on. I don't particularly like doing it, but we're going to talk about it. But just beware if you're betting. This is like the road to frustration, trying to predict these things. So we have Vanderpoel at plus 300. Like if he was a Tour de France contender at plus 300 and he was dominant, that'd be good. In a one day, you know, even Tom Boonen in his prime, you know, he wasn't just rattling off one day wins. He wasn't a sure thing. So I don't like those odds at all. Julian Alaphilippe, plus 500. Yeah, he's very good. This course looks great for him. I've not been following him in quarantine. I'd imagine he's in pretty good shape. He's always seems to be in good shape. Plus 500. I don't like it. No one's ever won this race twice in a row. Plus 500 is not very good. Jakob Fuglsang at plus 900. Yeah, I don't like that either. I mean, the guy's never won this thing before. Now he's in his mid-30s and he's going to win it. That doesn't totally add up to me. Max Shackman at plus 900. The Shackman, wow. We didn't even talk about him. Winner of Paris-Nice earlier this year. One of the last races. Actually, I think it was the last race to happen before everything was locked down due to COVID. Not a significant one-day race history. He is very strong, 26-year-old German. He was third at Liège-Bastogne-Liège in 2019. Some good stage wins at the Giro and Paris-Nice, but yeah, I don't know. I don't think so. I would not bet on him. It's kind of an odd place for him in the odds on the odds board. Wout van Aert at plus 1,000. All right, we're getting to the juicy stuff. That this is, so you bet 100, you could win 1,100 on van Aert. Third place the last 2 years, that's pretty good. We don't exactly know where he is after the injury, but, you know, I would like him. I would like him better than anyone we've mentioned so far. And then Peter Sagan at plus 1,600. That's insulting. Sagan should win it just to show him, but... yeah, that seems way too cheap. He is a bit tough to, he's never won this race before. It's tough to predict where he is, but I actually like that there. Tadej Pogacar at plus 2000. I like him for the tour. I'm not feeling him for Strade Bianche. That's crazy. He's that high. Alexei Lutsenko at plus 2000. I love it. I think the guy is a legitimate shot of winning this weekend. Greg Van Avermaet plus 2000. No, not going to happen. Oliver Nason plus 2,500. It's interesting. Nason he's a great rider. He's a little big. That steep finish, I don't think suits him. Philippe Gilbert plus 3,300. That's interesting. The finish is perfect for him. We know he's going to be in shape. I don't hate it. I hate guys in the mid 30s. I hate betting on guys in their mid 30s, but I think I'd break my rule for that. Bob Jungels at plus 3,300. No thanks. Vincenzo Nibali, the Scuola de Messina, at Shark of Messina at plus 3,300. You know, I love it in my heart. I don't love it in my head. I don't think he has a shot. Now here, this is interesting. Casper Askren at plus 5,000. I like him. He was runner up at Tour Flanders in 2019, I believe. He's an incredible rider. And he won Kern Brussels Kern this year. Oh yeah, this is a great pick. He's a little heavy. And then Nicholas Arndt at plus 10,000. I think he's too big. Daniel Oss, plus 10,000. He's also too big. That finish is too steep. But those guys are good riders. You know, if you want to bet, you know, $10 on them, that's not a terrible idea. They're very good. So that's our Strade Bianche preview and also the end of our episode this week. And let's just really enjoy this week. It's been a long time since we've seen, you know, live World Tour racing. And we got an amuse-bouche this morning with the Vuelta a Burgos. But there's a big difference between World Tour, one-day racing, and shorter multi-stage racing. So let's just sit back and, you know, watch our Eurosport. If you're cool in the U.S., you use a VPN to watch Eurosport. Email me for more information on that if you want to know. And also rate us on iTunes. It helps other people find the show. So if you enjoy it and you think other people enjoy it, you know, feel free to pass it along and rate it. It will help more people find the show. So thank you so much. And I will get a newsletter out this week before the start of Strade Bianche. So keep an eye on your inboxes for that. And you can sign up for my newsletter at beyondthepeloton.substack.com. Well, thank you so much and have a great day. And let's reconvene here next week to talk about what happened. All right, bye.